This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. He cut an unlikely figure for the saviour of mankind. Less than 5 feet tall and missing an eye, his left leg was several inches shorter than his right. If this made the 34-year-old office clerk an improbable source of global salvation, it also seemed a bit of a stretch that when the saviour of mankind did turn up, he'd be called Eric Smith. Eric had a divine mission, and to complete that mission, he required 3 young women and a leaky yacht. On the 16th of May 1957, the parents of 34-year-old nurse Janet Walters from Leamington were beside themselves with worry about their daughter. The last time they'd heard from her, she was about to board a boat and sail from the Thames to Israel on a faith-healing mission. That was 6 weeks ago. They'd heard nothing since. The vessel was a 28-foot converted Navy lifeboat called the Siroda. The boat and the faith-healing mission were commanded by Eric Smith, a fire and brimstone preacher from Lowestoft, out to save mankind. Janet had worked away from home in hospitals for some years, and we knew nothing of this venture until she telephoned us the morning before her departure, said her father Tom, a retired architect. Even then we assumed that the journey was to be made in a ship. We only learned after reporting her missing that they'd sailed in a tiny boat. He was very worried, and thought there was only a 50-50 chance that Janet was still alive. Also missing were Pauline Potter, a 25-year-old schoolteacher from Hastings, and Sheila Ripley, aged 20, a nurse from Gillingham. All 3 women had attended Smith's meetings at London's Caxton Hall, under the banner of the Full Gospel Revival and Healing Crusade. According to the caretaker, Smith's evangelising sometimes drew as many as a dozen people. But it seems Janet, Pauline and Sheila were the only ones convinced enough to sail with him to Israel in a 28-foot boat. Sheila's father, Bert, was a docker from Chatham. She was just a normal 17-year-old girl until 3 years ago, when Smith started filling her head with religious nonsense. In the months before the voyage, Sheila and the others had moved into a house in Kent, from where Smith was coordinating his operations. The beating heart of global salvation was, it seemed, in Sidcup. The quartet had set sail from a marina in Fulham at the beginning of April, hitting another boat and becoming entangled in mooring ropes before they'd even made it onto the Thames. That had been the last anyone saw of them. Janet had promised to write and call often, but the Walters had heard nothing since the phone call 6 weeks earlier. At his wit's end, Tom went to the police and put out an appeal in the newspapers. He was pretty convinced that Janet had perished somewhere in the English Channel, the Bay of Biscay, the Straits of Gibraltar, or even the Mediterranean. But the appeal brought good news. Janet and everyone on board were safe and well. In the 6 weeks since they'd set out for the Middle East, the Siroda had got as far as Southend. Having bumped and twanged its way out of Fulham, the boat had managed to make its way along the Thames, but the wide open seas of the estuary proved a bit too much. The Siroda ran aground on a sandbank, 300 yards off the coast of Lyon-Sea. It was frankly a miracle they got that far, considering that nobody on board had a clue what they were doing. "We intend to be touring missionaries," Eric had declared before they left, adding, "I know nothing of navigation, But with love, faith in God, and hard work, we will make it to Israel. They needed to work fast too. There is a Holocaust coming that will result in the depopulation of the entire world, and I, Eric Smith, God's instrument, will put things right. The Sirota had been on the sandbank for a month when Tom Walters' appeal went out. In the meantime, Smith had sent Sheila and Janet ashore, a long trudge across the mud at low tide, to find work to raise cash for repairs. Janet might have pointed out that she'd already handed over her £500 life savings, but before long, her and Sheila were on the production line at the nearby Echo Radio Factory. Eric stayed on board with Pauline. "I love Eric," she said, "and I know that if he was free to marry, he would." Eric had embarked on his mission of salvation after leaving his wife Ethel and their 3-year-old daughter Jacqueline and hightailing it from Lowestoft. When the papers revealed his location, the police trudged out to the vessel and issued Eric with a summons for unpaid child maintenance. He had quite a defence. "I trust the Lord to look after my wife and children. He will provide the rent." Now, the Lord was a bit behind on his paperwork, because 2 weeks later, Ethel was still waiting for her money. When the police went back to see Eric, the Sirota had gone. The voyage to the Holy Land had started, it seemed, and good job too, given the impending depopulation Holocaust. This time, they got as far as Burnham-on-Crouch, 40 miles around the coast from Southend. By the time the police tracked Eric down again, the Lord was still apparently unwilling to stump up Ethel's rent, but they did manage to strong-arm £26 out of his instrument. Eric nobly reminded them that once he was outside the 3-mile offshore limit, he couldn't be forced to pay for his daughter's upkeep anymore. Fast forward 3 years to 1960. Elvis was in the army, Castro had come to power in Cuba, the Carry On films had started, but the depopulation Holocaust hadn't come about, possibly because it was waiting for Eric, who was still moored at Burnham-on-Crouch. Pauline was now working at the radio factory, Sheila had an office job, and Janet had gone back to nursing. Their earnings, of course, went straight to Eric, for the Israel Voyage Fund. The man himself left the boat only to hold gospel meetings at a local hall, at which the congregation comprised Pauline, Janet, and Sheila. He was still determined to make it to the Middle East. "We found we were not ready to move off in 1957 as planned," he said. "A lot more work was necessary on the boat. These things take time. We shall now be setting off for the Mediterranean in the spring of 1961. We'll teach the gospel in Spain, France, Italy, and several other countries." Pauline was keen to point out that despite the unorthodox living arrangements, everything on the Sirota was above board. "Our relationship with Eric is a strictly religious one. We live together on the boat because it's the cheapest way. The mission is the important thing." When the spring of 1961 came around, there was still no sign of departure. The Sirota had been renamed the Eliakim after King Hezekiah's finance minister in the Old Testament. A fourth woman had joined the crusade, Iris Hammond, a 25-year-old former policewoman from Essex. Oh, and Pauline was pregnant with Eric's baby. The four women were now describing themselves as Eric's wives. Pauline and Sheila even had gold rings. Janet and Iris would get theirs as soon as Eric could afford them. All four planned to bear him children. and Pauline was looking forward to giving birth. "This is no normal baby," she said. "He will be a child of the Lord." By the end of that year, the full gospel revival and healing crusade had abandoned the Eliakim to the mud and moved into a cottage in West Mersey. Eric still talked big about undertaking that voyage to the Holy Land, but he wasn't as concerned about imminent Holocaust as he used to be. Instead, he was writing a book to be called The Christian Case for Polygamy. "I expect thousands of pounds in royalties," he said, "which should be a tidy enough sum to start us off. We may even get a larger boat." That was A Coastal Story. And I'm Charlie Connolly. If you like what you're hearing, do subscribe, rate and leave a review somewhere. We're on Facebook as Coastal Stories Podcast, and I'm at Charlie Connolly on Twitter. If you fancy pre-ordering my book about the English Channel, it's out at the end of June and called, get this, The Channel. Pre-orders do help authors, actually, especially in tricky times like these. So if you did want to pre-order a book, I'd be awfully grateful.